Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Good afternoon, everybody, and Happy New Year. This is Jay coming at you on Atlanta Technology Leaders. Happy 2015. Can't believe I'm actually saying those words, Happy 2015. Happy 2015 to my friends over here at Business Radio X.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, how you doing?
Oh, well, we have had a marvelous holiday. We're ready to get back to work, man.
Man, I'll tell you what, we were talking on the way in. I said, all of the work doesn't go away over the holidays. It just gets crammed forward.
It just stacks up.
The can gets kicked down, and then you walk into your office, and that can is huge, and everybody is coming at you at 100 miles an hour. But I'm real excited that we're starting the year off. We're setting the bar very high with my special guest and good friend today in the studio. I'm very excited because I'm going to warn you now, we're going to go downhill the rest of the year from here on out. This individual is going to set the bar so high that for the remainder of the year, we are going downhill. Kelly, you're nodding your head over there. I know you know what I'm talking about. My good friend, one of the smartest guys I know, Joe Serber, Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer for AGL Resources, is in the studio. Joe, thanks for being here, man.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Man, you are the man. And I say that in all sincerity. Joe and I got to know each other a few years ago, actually quite a bit more than that now, probably, through many different organizations around town, the GCLA and many others, of course, the United Way and a lot of others. And I tell you what, you will not find a more passionate and thoughtful and introspective leader than Joe. Literally, Kelly, and you can back me up here, literally every single meeting I'm in with Joe, he has a good idea. I think he's batting like 1,000 for out-of-the-box thinking. And I mean that, my friend.
Too kind.
No, I mean that. So, do you have a good New Year?
I did. It was a very good New Year. It's like you said, things tend to stack up at the end of the year, and then you take 2 weeks off, and you get a master's degree in college football, and you get to come back and you got to work again.
Thankfully, my dogs held up their end on the our dogs had held up our end on the SEC East.
Yeah, I was very proud of the Belk Bowl. It was quite an
Hey, we played the game that was given
we
us.
We did. We did a good
and
job.
And we were 5-0 in the East.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, the SEC West fell apart. The wheels came off, and they embarrassed us as a conference. No, I'm very excited about what's to come for the dogs. But let's enough about that. AGL Resources.
Yes, sir.
Now, here in Atlanta, it's an icon. Tell us about the history and about some of the other names that people might know, Resources.
Yeah, believe it or not, a lot of people aren't familiar with AGL Resources as a name, but they're very familiar with Atlanta Gaslight.
Sure they are.
And that's where we have our roots as a company. Actually, AGL has its roots as the oldest company in Georgia. That's over 150 years old. We've been providing service to customers in Georgia. And as a result of that, we've grown over the years to we now own 7 utilities from the Midwest to the East Coast. We serve over 4.5 million customers across a diverse set of businesses. The 7 utilities are where people know us, and we typically have brands that are familiar with people's backyards. It's Virginia Natural Gas in Virginia, Elizabethtown Gas in New Jersey, Florida City Gas in Miami, et cetera. Our largest utility is Nicor Gas outside of Chicago, which serves greater northern Illinois. And Atlanta Gaslight's where we have our roots here in our backyard.
Very cool. So how... Obviously, a huge portfolio.
Right.
The oldest company in Atlanta. I'm very familiar. I think all of our listeners are certainly going to be very familiar here in the metro area with Atlanta Gaslight. What is the impact of technology? And beyond just the meters and the actual stuff providing all of this obviously very critical service, tell me about the impact of IT. What's keeping you going every single day?
Yeah.
What's the work look like?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of the utilities itself are a regulated industry, and they have a very specific plan, and they're not dissimilar from a lot of other utilities in the country. And you'll see some derivation of that depending on the utility you're looking at. However, we have a very diverse business. So in addition to having the 7 utilities, we also have many companies in one. So under the AGL Resources umbrella, we also have a retail business that serves over 1.5 million customers.
Wow.
We have a wholesale business in Houston, which is very looks very much like a trading business. It's known as an asset manager. We also have storage business where we work in what we call the midstream space where we store natural gas. So it's a very engineering heavy acumen that works that business. The impact of IT is that we've been able to grow the company. We've been very acquisitive over the years where we've grown and acquired other utilities. As a result of that, you know, the technology has allowed us to scale the business. It's allowed us to drive efficiencies through the business. And at the end of the day, it's helped us better serve our customers. One of the most important things we do as a utility is make sure we're providing safe and reliable service to our customers. And the technology that we've employed in the utilities over the past decade have really allowed us to better meet both our customer commitments and our service commitments. Examples of that is where we've added automation into the field logistics process, mm-hmm. where we've been able to provide better customer care through the implementation of technology. Also, from a compliance perspective, one of the most important aspects of this face, or one of the most important issues that's facing the utility industry right now, is making sure that we understand how to maintain all the assets that are deployed. When you see issues that hit companies in the Northeast, like with Superstorm Sandy, et cetera, right. how we recover from those outages, how we make sure that we are providing reliable service and you know where that infrastructure is and how it's maintained. Technology is becoming an ever critical portion of that, where you went from a very paper-based, you know, these industries and these utilities in some cases are literally over 100 years old.
Right.
And you can imagine the trail of records management that you have over that time period that we're now having to bring into the new millennium. So that's an area where technology has been very important.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, just the complexity. I'm over here, my head's spinning a little bit, because you're talking about all this acquisition and all these different companies, a very diverse portfolio. I am assuming when you're acquiring, you guys are not all on the same systems, not in processes are very different. How are you dealing with that, and how are you normalizing and standardizing on certain, is that even part of your plan? I have to imagine it is.
It absolutely is part of the plan. So one of the things that, we're always looking for is, this past year we spent a lot of time on a roadmap. Mm-hmm. When we had the merger with Nicor in Illinois, Nicor Gas was the utility that ended up, remaining in that organization. And with that, they had the largest utility now in our portfolio. And so they had already made some very strategic investments in their business. One of the anchor systems, for example, is the customer information system. It's okay. The system that's kind of the big ticket item in most utilities from a technology perspective. They'd already made a significant investment. So we actually ended up looking at it objectively. And we have to take fresh eyes and say, what do you have in the cupboard now that you've grown? In our case, we were able to look across the portfolio now that it expanded. There were some very selective investments that we used that we acquired with the merger. And then there's other some things that we actually were already very invested in, and we felt like we were very forward-thinking, and we're now just continuing to deploy that plan forward right. into the new location.
You said something I want to drill down on just for a second, because I think it's very important, and it's such a way for a good CIO to approach things. When you're acquiring or you're merging organizations, it's not necessarily your way, but we want to get to one way. And you guys are open-minded enough through your acquisitions to look and say, hey, let's see what's in the cupboard, to your point. And if what they're doing is working and may perhaps better, more flexible, more extensible, more enterprise class,
right.
we'll take it and use it.
Yeah, exactly. In the case of Atlanta Gaslight, Georgia's the only unregulated gas state in the country. And so we had to make a very different decision for the Atlanta Gaslight utility, which serves 1.5 million customers, that was very different from these other six utilities that are right. largely a regulated environment. Being that Illinois had our utility there had the largest implementation of that regulated system, and it was very new, we felt like that was a great opportunity for us to extend that into the other utilities as well.
Very, very, very cool. So what are the pain points in some of this diversity? So you have this huge portfolio, and
right.
I know you're very, very involved in maintaining and in fact leading the portfolio
right.
for the organization. You have these business unit executives that have their thoughts
right.
on what they want. They're used to what they had, the more where they think they should going. How do you broker that,
right.
That whole rationalization process?
Well, the one thing I'll say is I'm very fortunate, and I don't know that all of us can say that are in the CIO seat. I'm very fortunate to have business partners mm-hmm. and somebody that I feel like they've welcomed me into their organization. They've welcomed me at the table as a part of their leadership team, and I am able to have very good access. And quite honestly, over the years, we've built up, I believe, understanding of each other, and they know that we have an ability to execute. And so as a result of that, I feel like we've gotten to a position where they're entrusting us with a lot of those decisions knowing that we'll work in a collaborative fashion with them. That said, I mean, we have one of the most important things we did with the regulated businesses, which is the probably over 70% of our business, is we built a roadmap this year. And it was on the heels of the integration. So you mentioned about integration, you know, just for the past 3 years, it is lots of let's connect this, let's add this. Now we feel like we're beyond at least the core of that integration, and now we're looking forward for the next 5 years. And as a result of that, you know, we needed a roadmap that we could start to educate people on what we have now that we've come out of this integration period, and how do we grow beyond this to make sure that we can achieve the company goals. And we were very, you know, clear that we wanted to make sure that the roadmap, you know, equipped us for that standardization and that process orientation you mentioned. We want to make sure that we're getting the value out of that. So now that we have this foundation in place, how do we get these processes consistent across that? And we also wanted to make sure that we were doing it in a fashion where when we did grow again, that we had a very definite path so that we didn't have to reopen that exercise to say, how do we make a new roadmap? No, no, no. We have a roadmap. We're now going to append to the roadmap.
It's a living document.
Exactly.
It's a living set of processes. I've taken the very same approach where you have this rolling roadmap, but it's living in the sense that and people may hear that and say, well, that you can't change all the time. Well, if the business dictates that it does, it certainly can. But you set up a set of processes so that it can morph over time. The burden, of course, is on us to create an architecture that is flexible and nimble so that when the new acquisition comes, it's not, well, I need 3 years and $50 million.
Yeah, that is a little bit of the story. One of the things we think it's one of the things I found the most value in is that you shut out a lot of conversations.
Yeah.
So typically when something happens, there's an event and we say, oh, we need a new X or this one isn't adequate, then a lot of technologists and engineers are their preferences to go out and survey the landscape. You know, let's go look at the magic quadrant, let's go check out all the options. Oh, there's 15.
It's in the upper right, it's great.
There's 15 players in this space, we need to go evaluate 15 players. And what we've had the luxury of doing is saying, look, we've made some pretty key investments, especially in our industry. There's a key set of choices, I would say. There are some fringe players, but for the most part, there's some dominant players. And we right now, at one point, we probably had one of each. But now we're down to a point where we've narrowed the playing field. So when we do have to scale, we shouldn't have to open back up some of these conversations. That goes back to the architecture and making a good selection in the first place. But to be that said, some of it's a preference. I mean, most of these technologies are world class and they can do the job. And it's a matter of how you apply them in your business. And it gets to be a little bit what flavor you prefer or what your brand preference is. But that said, we've really just tried to invest in what we already have and making sure we're extending it to the maximum use possible.
I agree. I think 80% of what we do as CIOs, a lot of are very interchangeable. A lot of those core technologies. I mean, I don't know that anybody is going to make their numbers because they're on Google Apps versus, you know, Office 365 versus Lotus Notes or whatever, God forbid. But, you know, a lot of these, and they're all world-class in their own way. They all have very similar functionality. It comes down to the preference. Same thing with CRMs. Same thing with many other core technologies. But when you get into industry-specific, obviously you have some tougher choices to make. All right. So now that we've turned the page into 2015.
Right.
I assume you were safe over the new year. You didn't go out and party too hard.
No, we made a low profile this
year. I was me too. No, that is amateur night. We stay off the roads at the Borough House. we make it a habit to stay off the roads. Or if we do go anywhere, of course, it's very close by.
Right.
But I rang in the new year with my sons, and I think I was asleep at 12:15. So,
yeah, I don't think we did. I don't think we may have actually bettered you there. So we got out of town, so we stayed off the roads. But we had to prepare ourselves to watch a marathon of football the next night till after midnight.
Well, so at least you had your priorities right.
Absolutely.
We got up and settled in, started the fireplace, and really enjoyed a great day of football.
Very nice.
All right. So, but from a business perspective, you're sitting there taking stock of what you have accomplished in 2014.
Right.
You're looking back. What are you most proud of in 2014 from an IT or CIO perspective?
You know, we spoke about the roadmap. I mean, I think that was crucial. Yeah. We really got a lot of buy-in. And when you talk about that that side of our business, we do have a lot of leadership. You talked about having to work with people to get buy-in. And it was a great tool for us to go and kind of set a vision and get people on board.
Tell us a little bit of how you socialized it, because I'm fascinated to hear how you did people get it right away? Was it
I mean, I think
all over the map?
There's always, it's all over the map. I think there's, but for the most part, I think that we have I think people know the value of the technology in the business. They see the advantages of having a strong technology platform. I've been very fortunate that we've always had a strong investment behind that, and people have not been compromised on what we need to invest in technology going forward. That said, you know, there's different people that are coming in, and as we talked about, especially with new faces, and we were coming off the heels of just integration mode for years, it was a great opportunity for people to kind of sit back and say, okay, we're not in just get it right mode. Right. We're now looking in a more strategic fashion. And it was able to get that voice out. And it was making sure that we had it not just where hey, here's your roadmap, take it or leave it. It was very much a collaborative process. Right. So we were showing people, and it was an iterative process. I mean, we had to go through and say, okay, here's our initial take on what we have. If you just ask from a pure technology view, these would be the options. And we did try to limit the options. We tried to go through, instead of saying, you know, you can do anything, we tried to go back and say, look, here's door number one, door number two, door number three. Here are the pros and cons of each, and these are the different consequences if you look at it through a 3-5 year lens, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we first had to, obviously publish that. We then had to socialize that with smaller groups. And we tended to start at the lower levels of the organization and then move up. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, different members of my team sold it at different levels to make sure that we were kind of taking we were working it from both ends.
Very, very cool. All right. So the roadmap is huge.
We also had – so one of the ways we're organized is by kind of lines of business. Okay. And so I have a corporate systems team, an infrastructure team, which is more of a shared service organization across all the companies.
Okay.
We then have – an organization that focuses on our unregulated piece of the business, which is wholesale and retail and our services business.
Okay.
And then we have a large percentage of organization which is devoted to distribution operations, which is the utilities. One of the areas in corporate systems, which was kind of our – once we did the integration of our corporate system, as you can imagine, a merger is very important. That was done relatively quickly, but then we had deferred a lot of work and a large upgrade. So we did a large upgrade of our PeopleSoft system last year. That was a monumental effort. And it only gets more complicated the larger you get as a company.
Of course, yeah.
We also did some – one of our last consolidation efforts was we consolidated all of our call centers across the country onto a similar platform, which allows us to get a lot of scale and efficiencies in terms of how they do workforce planning, et cetera. We actually use an enterprise trading and risk management system in both our retail business and our wholesale business, and this is the core system that they use, and we had two different platforms, and we were able to consolidate onto a standardized platform, and for the first time, kind of have a one-size-fits-all system.
That's huge.
That we can leverage from a shared services perspective across both those businesses.
That's amazing. Congratulations on all of those accomplishments. I'm going to flip the script just a little bit, though, before we go into 2015.
Sure.
As you reflect on 2014, I'm always curious, because if you would ask me this question, I'm about to ask you, and the list would be long and distinguished.
Right.
What do you wish you could have accomplished in 2014? In other words, back and say, gosh, I wanted to get these five things done at a macro level. I got four done. I really wish I could have gotten that fifth. Or were there missed opportunities, big or small for you as a leader?
That's a great question. I think one of the things that you always want to do things faster.
Yeah.
I think there's things that will, when you look at these roadmaps, some of these items we have, they're 3-year projects or 4-year projects. And so you always wish you could pull them forward. I think that one of the things that I've had to kind of be careful of or be mindful of as a leader is understanding that your pace is not necessarily everybody else's pace. At the same time, you talked about working with the business.
Yeah.
One of the things I think that as a challenge is always making sure that people understand it to the level you believe you do.
Right.
And so with this roadmap, we did a great job exercising it. I think we did a good job communicating it, but you always learn something. That was probably my biggest, could you do it differently? Absolutely. When you go through an exercise like that where you're trying to, garner a large amount of support across such a broad portfolio, there's things you're going to learn you could do differently. And I think that as a result of that, if we ever had to go through that exercise again, we would have done it very differently.
But a huge learning opportunity for you.
Sure. And I think, an example of that would be where, you go into an audience and you're selling something and there's an assumption that there's a base level of understanding when you go into that audience.
Right.
Well, in retrospect, if I go back and look at that challenge, we may have been able to shortcut that cycle and kind of let the rubber hit the road a little bit faster if we would have been able to kind of understand those gaps going in and do some of that individual coaching or mentoring or tutoring, for that matter, on here's what you have, here are the pros and cons, here are the risks, and also knowing that there are some, you know, some specific issues that people have, you know, very set opinions on, and how do we kind of diffuse that and make sure that people are looking at it through an objective lens?
Right.
Because I think at the end of the day, all of our business leaders got to a point where they understood what was best for the business, and they took any kind of bias and set it aside. I really feel like we got to that point. But it would have been great to have been able to create that environment sooner. And that's on me to make sure that I'm, you know, providing everybody a level playing field and their voice is being heard and that we're listening as much as we're, you know, talking about the roadmap.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you set the bar far higher. And I think the great leaders do. They set the bar far higher for themselves than the organization or other people do.
Right.
And as long as you stay one step ahead, generally, you're going to be very, very successful. It sounds like you
and
were.
And I think the other part that we all face is CIOs especially is that as big as these organizations can get, you still have to keep your hand in the strategic, but you also are getting paid to deliver the operations.
Darn
right. At the end of the day, you know, we have to focus on the core of what we're all asked to do, and that's making sure that we're delivering service, you know, to the business and to our customers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of those areas that you got to make sure that you're constantly trying to balance your time between how much do you, you know, do you want to neglect either one. But what I have found, if anything, last year for us was a learning that no matter how much you have going on the strategic side and how much that's a goal for you to drive that forward, you always have to make sure you're keeping your eyes on, you know, the day-to-day operations.
Nobody cares about innovation and strategy when the email doesn't
work
or the lights are going out or the gas is flowing.
And we talk about to that team all the time, if we cannot deliver the mail every day, make the donuts, whatever you want to call it, if we can't get that done every day, then we lose all credibility to ask for multi-million-dollar, you know, strategic projects. And I think that's something that our team has done a fantastic job of making sure that they, before they move on to the strategic, that they've at least got the core competency of the delivery nailed. And that, and for us, that's a lot of compliance. That's a lot of regulation. Mm-hmm. You know, as a publicly traded company with Sarbanes-Oxley and other different type of audits, that could be a derailer for us. And we have to make sure that we're focused on preventing those derailers so that we have the luxury and the privilege to go build on the more fun and strategic items.
Darn right. I mean, that to me is that's the core blocking attack. You can never take your eyes off. And I think so many CIOs maybe misfire or get enamored with the strategic side, although supremely important to the future direction of the company. You're sitting there wondering where to set sail, and you have your eye on Bora Bora or Tahiti or whatever. Meanwhile, your boat's taking on water, and you know people are fleeing the boat, and your oars are broken. And
I always find it hilarious. Whenever you get a group of CIOs together, you think you're going to talk about something strategic, and most people talk about email or mobile device management.
They do. They're like,
"What do I do about these cell phones?"
I know they're driving me crazy because you bring up such a good point because the 80-20 rule, 80% of our customers internal, what IT means to them,
right,
is the very simple stuff that CIOs don't generally get on stage and talk about.
Right.
Email to most of my fundraisers or my medical staff or my, you know, clinicians or everything else is our intranet, knowledge management, CRM, email, mobile device connectivity.
Right.
Those types of things.
Well, and I think the other part, too, is, you know, when you invest across a portfolio of businesses, you know, just because, you know, corporate systems is something, and infrastructure projects, people know it's there. They want the plumbing to work, and they want to be able to pay invoices, et cetera. But you have to make sure that you're aligned with each business leader's agenda. And, you know, quite frankly, the person that's running business A, as much as they're appreciative from the corporation that you move the ball forward in business B, you know, if you neglect business A, you're not meeting that person's needs. And so you have to make sure that you're listening across all those areas of the business and that you're paying enough attention, because if they don't see, you know, if just to your point, the perception's reality sometimes,
it
if
is.
Not all the time. And if you're sitting in that business and you don't feel like your needs are being met, then you're neglecting one for the other, and that doesn't work in the long run.
All my years with AIG was very similar. You know, as we were moving things together, business unit presidents were completely on board with you 100% of the time, as long as their needs were being met.
Right.
They were the biggest corporate cheerleaders in the world for all of these initiatives, as long as their needs were being met. But the second they weren't, they're like, well, what the heck? Why is business B over there getting what they need? And you guys forget about us?
And the things, you know, you talked about things in 2014. Yeah. I think one of the areas I'm always trying to focus on is that you can also get inundated with that same operational or the kind of keeping the lights on. you also have to keep your eye on strategic. And so sure, when you look at what we're proud of there, you know, it's growing into new markets. It's enabling the business to go serve in a capacity we haven't done before. You know, it's providing technology that's allowing them to better serve their customers, to grow their customer base. And those are some areas that you're most excited about because those really do move the needle.
They do.
And that's important that you're always, you know, carving out time to make sure that you're, you know, that everybody can find projects to do. And it's making sure that when you go back and look across that project portfolio that there's a balance to it that says, as much as I have to invest in the core, I've also got to look forward. I've also got to be making strategic investments. And I think that's something that's changed about the CIO role over the years is that as much as we're still dependent upon to manage the core and operate the core, you're being asked to participate in that conversation and quite honestly educate people on what are they missing, what do they need, or what tools do we have at our hand that we can actually carry the business forward with.
Totally agree.
And if you're not raising that voice and you're not speaking up and showing other business leaders on how we can enable the business, then you're missing a huge part of your role.
Totally agree. I think we are far more strategic as a group of executives. And I would argue, and you've heard me say this before, we have the best seat in the house.
That was great.
As CIOs.
Sure.
Because we get to see everything.
It is.
And that's why you're seeing more and more CIOs take on operational roles, administrative roles, whether it's CAO, COO, yep, et cetera. Because it's dawning on super senior executives and boards that we are very good, that the accomplished CIOs do make good COOs and CEOs because we see the entire portfolio and that we are strategic. We get to walk in both worlds, which is both a blessing and a curse. Right. All right, speaking of looking forward,
yep,
I'm not going to let you off the hook. 2015, what right, are your big items for 2015? What's exciting you about this year? Other than Georgia.
Exactly. So what's exciting us this year is that we feel like we really are beyond a lot of the core integration that we talked about. So we have, you know, I think we can put the mission accomplished banner up and say, okay, we are integrated. And now it's a question of how do we move forward?
Right.
So at this point, you know, we're looking in our services business of how do we expand into a couple of new markets. That's very important to us. It's something they've been waiting on. And a lot of businesses, quite honestly, have got – and it's not just from an IT integration, just the business integration. A lot of things kind of got put on hold or things had to be done in order to enable the growth or enable their initiative to move forward. And I think everybody's really anxious about that. We've got a lot of stuff that we're – everything's in place. The plumbing's in place from a business process perspective, from a technology perspective, and now it's a matter of executing on some of these forward-looking goals. So expansion into new markets, mm-hmm, is a part for our retail and our services business. I think there's new opportunities on the utility side where – now that we have this roadmap defined, we can now go execute on this. So all of a sudden, you can see, you know, January 1st hit, and one of the things we joked about before we left for the holidays is that it always seems like when people come back from the holidays, it's kind of a rolling start. And it was really imperative for us to kind of hit the ground running, kind of right, full steam. So we spent a lot of last year in the fourth quarter, you know, gearing things up so we could really hit the ground running January 1st. And so some of these roadmaps we have. You know, iterative releases. One of the things we're most excited about is we're replacing our field logistics platform for our utilities, which really, you know, there's a step change that we've found in those technologies, and it happens less than every decade. But I mean, it's probably been about 6 or 7 years before there's been a core change in that. And what you see now is that the technology providers are now offering solutions for that space that are. That take into account all the new form factors of technology that weren't available 6 or 7 years ago.
Oh, cool.
So you're seeing things where, you know, the mobile technology that, you know, used to be something that was kind of a more of a forced conversation, they're now built for mobile. You know, they're mobile ready. And so we're really anxious about that. We're deploying our first utility with that later spring. So that's very exciting. We've also got this large build of our asset integrity systems, our CIS systems. The customer information system is kind of the core of what we do, and we have this initiative where we've already made a selection, and we're moving forward in that.
That's awesome. So, sounds like a great year.
It is.
Teed up. The competition for talent, especially in a city like Atlanta, is huge.
Right.
Somebody told me at one point, and whether this is true or not, I'm going to throw it out anyway because I love throwing out undocumentable facts.
Sure. Try to
verify. That IT unemployment is less than 1% here in the city of Atlanta. Now, whether that's 100% accurate, I think it's probably you know, hand grenade close.
Right.
The war for talent is on. How do you attract and retain talent? I mean,
well, I think we've had an extremely, good track mm-hmm. record of retaining talent. I think we one of the things that we've done is I think we have, as a company, I think we've been growth mode, but yet we still provide an essential service. So I think people see that some bit as a safe harbor. But that said, the company's still been growing, and I think we pride ourselves in being a utility and a company that doesn't perceive itself as a utility company. I think we very much have been atypical in that we just see ourselves as a diversified energy company. We're the largest natural gas distribution company in the country. And, you know, we take great pride in that. And I think that attracts a certain number of people, especially as a benchmark in the industry. And a lot of the people that are technologists, the utility or the energy industry is a very specific industry, just like you would be in financials or retail, et cetera. You find that there's 2 degrees of separation between a lot of the talent. Once we do have people, we think we've been very innovative on how we allow flexibility and autonomy for them to perform their work. Mm-hmm. We feel like we give people the opportunity to be owners of the technology, not just managers of the technology. And I think that's very important. We know we get a lot of talent from some places where they said, well, I came from this company, and it may be a revered company that you think of in the IT space, but they said, I only got to manage the box, and all I could do was touch the box. I didn't get to tell you what box we were going to use. I didn't get to do anything outside of the box. I just had to manage the box.
Make sure the lights are green.
But when they came into our environment, they actually got to be more participative in the process where they could help select the box. They could help determine the future of the box. And they could actually manage maybe multiple boxes.
That's right.
And that was very important. We also have, from an attraction standpoint, we've noticed the challenge as well. I mean, you can see in the marketplace now, especially when you're going out to find very specific talent that everybody's competing for. If it's a niche type player, it's been very demanding to go find that talent.
It sounds like, though, you're really striking at the core of what attracts both young and experienced talent.
Yeah, I think
in the marketplace.
Yeah, I think we have great diversity in our workforce in that regard. I don't think we cater to any one audience better right. than the other. But I think what we found is that, to your point, people, we have to know that when the standard come to the office mentality is long gone. We are trying to make sure that we're offering every opportunity for people to telecommute or work remotely. We're trying to make sure that we're being flexible with hours. We're trying to make sure that people see a diversity in the work that they do, mm-hmm. That people want to grow. We are trying to, when we have a need, the first thing we do is we go into our own staff and let people kind of raise their hand to say, is this an opportunity for me to kind of transition my skills? One of the things that we've tried to build our team on, and this is one of the reasons I think we've had a tribute to our retention, is that I believe we have a team of subject matter experts, and we've tried to get the wrench turning, if you will, as much either to other hands mm-hmm. or to the best available partner. So it's highest and best use for the employees. And so as a result of that, people feel like they're maybe actually more they're participating in more of the strategic.
Right.
They feel like that they're more engaged with the business. They feel like they actually have a say in determining the path of not only the technology but how the business process delivers. And then I think we've done a really good job of making sure that we have the scale behind the projects as well as the speed behind the projects by leveraging partners and vendors that we know are better equipped than we are, quite frankly, to make sure they can staff up for the latest trends or the latest technologies where we say, hey, when we're ready to go, you can go build it, but we're going to direct you. We don't feel like we outsource anything. We try to make sure that we're just leveraging the right mm-hmm. right resources for the right job, but we're very much staying in control. We're dictating the architecture. We're dictating the path, and we're dictating probably the pace. But we can find others. If we can find others that can actually do the base work, then we're absolutely willing to look at that.
So saying take that hill, somebody said this to me very early in my career. Jay, I'm going to tell you to take the hill. How you take it, as long as it's legal.
Right.
And you don't get us in hot water.
Right.
And you don't, start insulting other executives, et cetera. Take the hill, and you're often going to get surprised by what your people do. What I heard you say is you're trusting your people.
Oh, absolutely.
You're empowering your people. You're giving them choice projects to work on. You're in growth mode, which is always fun. And you're the biggest in the business. I think those, plus many other things you mentioned.
Right.
When you roll those all up, that's a pretty compelling case.
It is, and I think we have, you know, I attribute a lot of that to our leadership team and to our employees. We're, you know, that we have a distinct culture at AGL Resources, and I think that's pervasive through all of our utilities. There's a very unique culture in each of the utilities that we serve and the markets they serve, but at the end of the day, I think that familial type culture and the fact that we all are, you know, very much focused on the safe and reliable delivery of natural gas for our customers and keep that customer focus really attracts a lot of people.
That's very, very cool. Well, I owe you, we're almost out of time, but I want to, because I don't want to forget, I want to congratulate you. You are the 2015 Vice Chair of the Georgia CIO Leadership Association, the GCLA. Of course, you are our programs chair, and we had probably one of our, if not, well, not one of our most successful programs year in the organization's history in 2014.
So it's all under your leadership.
Oh
Jay.
Gosh, no, I, no. I will not let you do that. It's no. You came up with some amazing ideas, some of our in the boardroom things that were very, very successful, and many of the other innovative ideas in 2015. And being vice chair in 2015 with our new chair, Karen Renner, you can only go up from my leadership, man. I promise you there's only one way to go from my leadership. So congratulations.
Thank you.
The organization is in very good hands, and I'm excited to see what you're going to do in 2015, you and Karen. So tell me, you know, speaking of the GCLA, I always like to end each show because
sure.
I want to ask our CIOs what the GCLA means to you. Now, you've been involved longer than I have, although I feel like I've been involved forever.
Right.
When I joined, I was a newbie, and you were part of the old guard, even though we're the same age. What's the GCLA mean to you, and why is it so special? We always hear that. It's so special.
Yeah, it's special. You know, I think we've all talked, you know, kind of ad nauseum, that Atlanta's unique, the technology, you know, community is very tight. But as a result of that, there's also a lot of noise.
Right.
There's a lot of different organizations that people can choose to invest their time in, and you have to be very wise and selective in that, or you just can be inundated. And I think for me, the thing that's been great about the GCLA is its core focus has been, you know, by CIOs for CIOs. And it's also a program that persists throughout the year and throughout multiple years. So instead of going to one event and you leave and you get whatever you can out of that 1 or 2 days, this is actually an organization that's, you know, fosters relationships. It's building a forced network in some regard. And, you know, that relationships have been great. Just having this dialogue we're sitting here having on a microphone, we can have every day throughout that membership.
Right.
And that's been vital to be able to pick up the phone and say, hey, Jay, what do you think about this? Or what have you done here? Or have you done this roadmap before? What have you learned? I know that, you know, for me, I can count endless times where I was able to pick up the phone or go visit another organization and somebody just opened their doors to me and say, oh, we've done this before, and here's how this works. I never forget John Searle when we first started looking at some of our offshore development. You know, he basically said, come on down, I'll set you up with these three guys. And people like Vinky Rao and others, you know, sat there and gave me the playbook. I mean, here's how we do it at GE. And right. I wasn't GE, but I was able to learn what parts of that I could implement, what parts weren't right for an organization our size. I could understand what the best-in-class benchmarks were in terms of price and rate and, you know, right. service levels, et cetera, and then understand how I could apply that to my business. And that's key. You have to take whatever learnings and apply them to your business.
Absolutely.
But having that just – for me, there's not any other – I mean, I've got – you can get industry relationships that are almost, you know, come de facto by being in the industry. But being able to kind of benchmark yourself against other companies and a diverse set of companies and other industries, et cetera, that just sharpens – the sword all the better for you and lets me apply that back to our business.
Totally agree. Well, very, very well said. And you touched on John Searle and Vinky Rao, who are two of the best in the business.
Yep.
Two of my favorite people in town as well. The GCLA is 115 members strong. Can you believe that? Can you believe 115?
It's remarkable. And I think what's great is it's companies of all sizes. It's of all different industries. Yep. And I think – and what I've seen in every forum we've been in, regardless of whether you're the largest company or smallest company, people have always had an ability to contribute. And one of the things we were even talking about in a meeting we had for our planning for this year is that, you know, many times the same thing I was talking about, talent that comes from the big company can only focus on the box.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you're a really large company, when I talk about 3 and 4 year project implementations, you can go to one of our brethren and they laugh at that. They're like, 4 years for a project? Are you kidding me? And so the fact that they can have maybe a faster cycle on some of the technology – they're getting a better view on a lot of the newer stuff sometimes, and it's great to hear some of that, and I can then understand how I can apply it in our environment. Does it fit? How does it apply? Could I apply some piece of it?
Right.
And that's what's been great to drive a lot of innovative thought.
Very, very cool. Well said. I can't even really add anything to that. You really summed it up nicely. Our first membership event is February 18th. Is that right, Kelly? Kelly Eckstein Harris, who's next to me? I'm still throwing out the Eckstein. She'll wean me off of it eventually. At 11:30 a.m. at the Ritz-Carlton in Buckhead, we're going to be announcing some of the exciting changes to the GCLA in 2015. You can find out more at, of course, GeorgiaCIO.org. Joe, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
You are awesome. One of the best in the business,
folks. We know what you're going to do is your next career now.
No, gosh, no. Don't quit my day job, right, yep. Stone? I mean, all of you guys, God, just quit flapping your gums.
The UGA recruiting show right after this, right? You just keep
this.
The microphone.
We're going to keep the microphone rolling, and we're going to talk about
call now.
Coach Shoddy and our new offensive coordinator, who I'm very excited about. But anyway, Joe, thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
Man. And I want to thank our folks at Business Radio X for putting us on the air and indulging me and this microphone, and you guys are the best.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, everyone. We'll see you next month on Atlanta Technology Leaders. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
Make your next event more engaging with live radio, powered by Business Radio X. Learn more at radioinmybooth.com.